What up, folks? I got ads. Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to add your podcast in How Did You Hear About Podgo section of the application.
I think it's time to blow this thing. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
I've been listening.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you? Fuck yeah.
The DD episode was a favorite.
Ah,
Tony,
yeah.
Tony Frederick, man, hearing...
Everybody's excited to hear. Because I just really talking to Piccola today. Mm-hmm. I did one with her, and she was like, that Tony Frederick one? Oh, man, it was really fun. I was like, oh, fuck yeah. Because not everybody gets to hear about the inside of Tony Frederick. You know, people just know Tony Frederick. So when it comes... to actually like hearing about his background and all that, I guess people do want to listen a little more, you know.
He's got some wisdom, man.
Yeah,
those LA stories were fun.
Yeah, so. Yeah, fuck yeah. Good old Tony. What's up? I'ma take the raspberry back again, goddammit, to another edition of Tell Me a Joke, the guideline of chasing a dream. Today I'm here with the man that He's helped me on my way to my journey of dream chasing to becoming an actual working comedian. Put y'all hands together. I never actually put the hands together. Put y'all hands together for Jay Costin.
Send a voicemail.
Yeah. What up, man? What up?
It's good to be here. With you.
Yeah. Yeah, I finally got to make it back. I was like, well, Jake, I definitely need to talk to Jake, because, you know, Jake's one of the people that, if it wasn't for Jake, like, I don't know at what point in time where I would, be at this point in time, you know, because if you don't mind, I would like to let people know, like, how I actually got through the first few months in L.A. All
right, yeah, I'll tell you how you helped me after that, man.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, my first few months in L.A., just to go ahead and round things off, because this is where I started this podcast at, was in L.A. My first few months in L.A., just to get through, fucking Jake helped me out, man. Jake bought me an Airbnb for like a few months, and, you know, it was hitting the ground running from there. And, like, ever since I've met you, dude, you've been like a big staple in, you know, just me trying to progress and do better for myself, dude. I really thank you, man.
Hell yeah, man. Right on, dude.
Fuck yeah.
Cheers, dude. That's nice to hear.
Uh-huh.
Man, we also had fun in L.A.
Ended up
in weird houses behind hidden entrances and all this kind of stuff.
Playing very strange.
People I watched on TV in my youth, yeah. And shit like that, man.
Very good times. I kind of expected from L.A. to be L.A. and how, you know, the Hollywood magic goes and shit. And being out there. Like, it really happens, but you don't think it's going to happen like how it happens, but it's just like, oh, shit, just like this? I mean, it feels like, you know, when shit like that happens, you know, that saying, oh, small world. It's kind of like that, but it's definitely not a small world once you get out there, you know, but just to be out there and mingle with and then get into the things that I got into, it was a good experience.
That was such a weird day, because it began with me and my old buddy who's a camera guy in LA,
yeah,
saying, hey, let's go take a hike somewhere.
I'll
pick you up at 10. And he shows up and he's like, hey, you know what? I think I'm just going to text my boss and see if he might be free, and then we'll just head over there. He's got a place in Malibu, and then next thing you know,
yeah,
there we are, man.
There we are swimming in this pool and shit, and he's showing us all his agriculture that he's growing in the backyard.
He's got legal and semi-legal agriculture going in the backyard. And beautiful tomatoes. It was very appetizing looking.
Yeah.
But it was like, he had his own little like private jungle in the back there. It's like he had to go past a bunch of bushes and like there's a hidden driveway and then
yeah, that was there. The first time me being in Malibu. I've never
Me too, man.
And that was like I drove up to Malibu just because I wanted to check out all the beaches while I was out there.
Yeah.
So I drove up to Malibu to go and check out Malibu Beach, but apparently Malibu Beach is covered by like all the houses and shit. Like you actually got to walk down to it. Uh-huh. And I was like, man, fuck all this. I don't, you know, like I got to pay for parking. Didn't find the entrance just to walk down to the beach.
You got to repel a cliff and shit to get there.
Yeah, I'm like, fuck this. I'm good. I'm in Malibu. I've seen Malibu. Malibu, y'all fucking bougie and stuck up. I'm out. And that was my experience until, you know, you came down and we met up with your friend and then that adventure that we went on, that was something.
That was such a wild day, man. I had no idea what was about to happen when I woke up. The best part for me is when he goes, oh yeah, my wife's coming home soon, and then his wife comes in the door, and it's the woman from Reno 911.
Yeah,
who's like one Trudy of the funniest people. my buddies from college and I still quote Reno 911 and quote Trudy Weigel lines and quote lines from The State, you know, like,
did
you watch The State back?
I never watched The State.
You too young for that?
I've heard about The State. I never watched it though. Like Reno was my thing. That's what I stuck to.
You've watched The State because like so much sketch comedy since then is just borrowing heavily from The State. They really launched a new vibe, I think.
Oh, shit.
Back in the day. And then obviously all this, it was a huge group of people, and then a bunch of them have gone off to do their own shows, including Reno 911, including a bunch of other ones that I'm not gonna come up with right now. But they wrote movies. Those dudes wrote the what is it, Lost in the Museum movies. They got their hands in all kinds of stuff too. Yeah, but anyway, whatever. We're not here to IMDb those motherfuckers.
That's very interesting. Like so, You dabble when it comes to comedy. You're like in and out when you know you're here and you're there. What drew you to actual comedy?
Well, like I've always loved comedy. I've always done heavy viewership and like study of comedy. I like crafting language a lot in various forms.
Yeah,
comedy being like the most you know, like distilled version of that, which I love. I did an MFA in creative writing. This was like 10 years ago now.
What's the MFA?
Master of Fine Arts.
Ah.
It is a tremendously bad financial investment if any of the listeners are considering it. But it was a really fun 2 years of just like geeking out with people of the tribe, you know, people that were into writing and reading and just reading heavily. You know, I read 2 novels a week basically for 2 years.
Jesus.
Intensive shit, and like got around some really, really interesting and cool, inspiring writers and editors. Actually, the best teachers I had there were editors. I don't think I learned a lot, but I really accelerated what I would have sort of uncovered on my own, you know, maybe like 8 years worth of reading and sort of developing compressed down to 2 years and just, you know, having a good time along with it.
What were these novels about? 2 novels a week, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's a lot of words. It's a lot of words to take in.
It's a lot of words. I was deep in it, man. I had to take a break. I didn't read any novels for a couple years after that.
I would assume. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Novels. I mean, you got books and you got magazines, you got books, and then you got novels and you got graphic novels. And it's like, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I mean, the novel itself, how, you know, so many pages and shit.
I love it, man.
Was it something that you were reading to expand your knowledge on something, or was it something for like work?
I mean, that's a good question. I would say yes to expand my knowledge. Maybe not knowledge as much as like perspective and like expanding, just like worldview, expanding empathy, just like seeing different stories and points of view. I feel like a novel is like taking a deep climb into another person's head for an extended period. Yeah. You know, if you watch comedy or if you watch a movie, you get sort of a quick dose of someone's vision.
Yeah.
But when you're reading a novel, you know, over days or weeks or whatever, you know, you're probably reading 10, I don't know, 20 hours if it's a long one, something like that.
Jesus.
I'm not a very fast reader.
Yeah.
I'm
terrible at reading.
There's really, I mean, like, now, you know, there's such variation in novels too. Like, you know, a lot, there's novels that, you know, sort of woke me up and changed my engagement with the world in cool ways, you know, like mainly in my 20s, I think more than at this age now, but like some novels are more expansive and philosophical and story driven. Some are very much, you know, like they called it sentence art, where it would just be like crafting, you know, it's like crafting lyrics, I guess, you know, but yeah, you know, like really every syllable, even like there's some people that even talk about the artistry of like the shape of different letters and how they hit, you know, in sequence on the page. Like, you can get really, 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 really microscopic on that stuff. And like there's a couple writers that couldn't write a story to save their fucking asses, but could like craft these beautiful sentences and have these like surprises and turns and kind of lyrical quality to what they write. And
I've never thought about it like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's you write poetry. That's it's essentially like closer to poetry than in prose writing.
Yeah.
But it's like long. But it just happens to be longer, I guess. But yeah, yeah, I mean, it's not like it's anything foreign.
It's wild because I was just talking to John and Kamari about this yesterday, like. The way other people look at certain things compared to the way I look at it, it's totally different. And I feel as if I'm not like I'm lost out the loop or something like that. Most people have a sense of when they're into something, they know the whole background, they study it and all that. Me, I'm just like, oh, this interests me. And so I just get into it without you know, looking up the background, what I should do, why this is being done. I just fucking start doing it. It's strange because, you know, I don't really know any like type of terminology compared to what I'm doing. I'm just doing it because this is what I see other people do. So when it comes to like looking at stuff like that in you know, reading and the comprehension of it, I'm just like, oh, this interests me, so I'm gonna get into it. But it's never like reasonings of why I'm doing it.
I mean, it's really interesting. I'm sure you're intuiting a lot of the stuff that you would get from quote unquote studying it. Mm-hmm. But there's an interesting division that you're making me think is that like there's you know the active form of doing something, engaging with someone, like you can, So there's the doing it versus academically studying it is like very different things. And you can go way too deep, you know, and I've witnessed people go way too deep academically studying things. They never do anything. They never produce anything. Maybe they get scared. The thing is you can always go deeper. If you're academically studying things, there's no fucking end to that. Mm-hmm. Well, like you can just go there forever. And there's definitely like diminishing returns at some point. And I mean, I'm glad like I absorbed all the books and reading that I did and like conversations I had and sort of conversations I had with a couple professors that I thought were great, but I don't think I got any better at writing those two. there's no like formula, there's no like lessons to teach or whatever. It's more just about getting into touch with that productive active side, mm-hmm. where you're instead of like vacuuming and stuff where you're putting that
work to use.
You're putting it back out, right? So like, but when I'm writing stuff, and I'm writing a movie right now, and that's what I've been working on for like the last several months. What I've realized is that like the more academic minded, or the more I will study, or the more I'll like maybe even get into a certain movie or whatever, the more I get swayed away from what I'm really trying to say with what I'm actually doing. Mm-hmm. So. You know, the writing process is an interesting thing, and there's a lot of like trial and error about finding what is the most effective for each person, because everyone's got a different process about doing that. And I guess I have a tendency to go more to the academic side because it's interesting. I'm like a curious person, and I'm kind of analytical, I guess. But to get to the point where I'm doing creative work that I like, I have to turn that. I have to get away from that. I have to like do some preparation and get more into the other side, which is why I like comedy. This is to get back to the first question. I always love comedy. I always love it moved me. I always love studying it too from a distance and seeing what what how jokes worked and everything like that. And I'd always write jokes. I'd always like, you know, email myself jokes. I used to do it in notepads or whatever.
Yeah.
But it never like occurred to me to get up and perform it. It was always just really? More like an exercise. And then the first time that I went to see comedy in New Orleans, which I believe I told you before, but it's been some time, was at Redux, and it was the night that y'all find out about John Rowe.
Oh,
the first shit. Comedy show I ever saw in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Was the John Rowe Memorial Show at, I guess you'd call it Memorial Show, but it was also more like just dealing with this news and everything like that. And like,
oh man, he came in around a rough time.
I mean, I couldn't put it in words, man. It was like the incredibly moving, dude, because there were people up there. They'd be crying on stage and they'd be making you laugh.
Make you laugh, right.
And then back to crying and then making laugh again. Yeah. And then there was a very loud drunk lady that was in the middle too that kept heckling. And I was like, this woman is a problem. This woman needs to show more respect to the memory of John Rowe. Stop disrupting the show and all this beauty that's transpiring out there. And I'm just gathering up all this anger for this woman. Then she gets up and she does her speech on John Rowe and just broke my heart, and like it was the most beautiful words of her.
Everybody had their little sentiments. That was man.
But dude, I remember very clearly that night, because like your performance that night just fucking moved me, man. I fucking just fell in love that night. It was incredible, dude.
It was really powerful. I'm glad, because we just gotta basically carry on the memory of our homie. So you know, even though it is. Sad moments, sad times and all that, but we're still comics nonetheless, so we're still gonna do what we do, because it's crazy, because that's how it was for his funeral. It was kind of something to the sort of like, it still felt like a stand-up show, even though, you know, we're over here grieving and everything, like, we grieve through laughter still, so we was able to, you know, commemorate the memorabilia, the memory of our homie through a show, and it just stuck with us. So Young Funny, it basically is glued together now, with no like cement glue. There's no separation. There's no separating it now, because
he was like a torch, that guy. Bring a lot of energy.
And you know, the homie's passed, so it's like, we got to do this for the memory of our friend. And you know, even though most of the times you don't see us, we're not like a normal group, which I think helps us stay to be a group, Young Funny. So to say that we don't always, it's not always us doing things together, it's always us separately doing stuff. But whenever it comes as a collective, people still know Young Funny. And that's one of the things that it fucks with my head, because I'm like, oh, like, all right, people actually see it, people actually notice that this is a thing that we do, even though we're not out in the scene like everybody else is trying to be. We're still like holding it down, because it's not gonna go anywhere.
Yeah, it's like a brotherhood. I can see that. Yeah, it's cool. Mm-hmm. You guys, everyone's doing their own thing in conversation with each other, and in sort of in the same you know, garden, whatever.
Yeah, it's been a fun few years, especially having to deal with, you know, because the places that I've been to, especially like in LA, when I got out to LA and I started living out there, they had a mic, because one of their friends in their scene had committed suicide.
Oh shit.
Yeah. And so they put a benefit on for her, just kind of like we did for John. And like, everybody was there, and they had their own emotions and their own feelings, because, you know, that was a close friend that they dealt with. And everybody was able to go ahead and give their jokes and stuff. That it's like, John was a character. So whenever I see that, whenever I see something that similar to what we did, I realized that, our friend was really different. Like, he was really a special character. Like, compared to the other people, you know, their little memorabilia show that they gave for this person was decent. But I understood that, like, we actually, there was something that was going on there that we actually had with the homie, mm-hmm. bringing all of us together, and you know, putting it out there like that.
So to
Luchin's got a story like that too, right? He lost, there was a friend
from
like comedy partner that died in, when he was in Florida. But yeah, man, like the that concept and what makes comics so crucial for my life and existence is exactly that. It's having heart and having humor at the, you know, at the same time, because those are both critical things, man. Like if you don't have one or the other, you're lacking in my opinion. And comics seem to get that line better than most, mm-hmm. and get that balance in reality better than most. I remember I'll tell you a quick story. Mm-hmm. When my mom passed away, so my dad and my brother were in there. This is an inside family joke, but what had happened was I had this pet bird when I was growing up, named Dino. It was a little it was a cockatiel.
Yeah.
Seen the cockatiel? It was like yellow bird with a little, off the top. Yeah.
Stick up at the top.
Poor thing lived a long time in this tiny cage in the kitchen.
Oh, shit.
Just eating and shitting and squawking, man. It was a great bird. It would, like, get excited when you came in or come over to the cage and you can ever, you know.
Yeah.
Looking, I was a kid, I didn't know any better. Looking back, I don't think I'd put a bird in a cage again. I feel bad, but you take it out and you know, it'd sit on your shoulder and it would nibble at your ear, and it was this long pet that I then dropped my parents when I moved away, and then they had to clean up the shit for another 5 years or whatever after I left. Point being, when the bird finally expired after, I think it was like 18 years or something like that.
Jesus, that's a long time.
Yeah, man, they lived a long life. So we got on the phone. We're like, all right, let's cremate the bird. You know, we're gonna call up the cremation services, and like, okay, that'll be $400.
Oh my God!
And we're like, excuse me, this is a bird. This, you know, this weighs about, you know, a fraction of a pound. This thing, and they told us that no, it's 0 to 100 pounds is the same price for pet cremation, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. There's no special rate, but they don't do it by weight. It's just, yeah, like, you got a
pet. We made it ourselves. We're just trying to fucking give you some business. Jesus.
You got a pet, you're paying $400. Yeah, so that's exactly we hung up the phone and we're like, thank you very much. We got a web route back. We'll take care of this. So we put the bird, me and my dad bonded. We put the, we fired up the coals. We put Dino on the grill. And we took care of it, man. So flash forward to when my mom passed away, and we're in the hospital. She'd been sick for a while, so, like, you know, we were somewhat prepared for this to happen, but still, you're never all the way prepared for that situation. And after she passed, then, like, the hospital people come in and they're like, okay, so, like, you know, decision time. What do you want to do? Is she going to be buried? Do you want us to bring her to the crematorium? And my reflex, what I said was, well, we can't fit her on the Weber. And yeah, man, having jokes, it's a beautiful thing in my family too, because we have, like, my dad's got a really good sense of humor. He's a funny guy. My brother as well, so, like, we're able to communicate around that, and you know, to have moments like that, man. It's what, you know, I don't know what I'm rambling about it now, but, like, you get what I'm trying to say. Being able to drop a dark joke in there,
right,
is really, like, cathartic and important, and it's
what comedy comes from.
Well, yeah,
the deep darkness of the souls. When a comic becomes a true comic, that's when you can just go ahead and talk about life and be a normal person on stage instead of trying to be a persona or some type of character, which everybody tries to find as they try to find their voice on stage. So to say that you can come in and just talk about life experiences and then put it like that, even though, because I listen to a lot of Ryan Sickler's The Honeydew.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I heard one or two of those.
It is. Yeah. I bring this up often just because it's so good, because he's got most comics that I know of are fucked up. Most of them are fucked up in the head. They have fucked up childhoods and shit, which hints one of the reasons why I actually ask about, you know, people's people's backstory.
You think everybody's fucked up? You think comics are more in touch with it?
No, not all comics. I just want to see what got you to being a comedian. Because, you know, it's like a superpower we kind of gained as a child. You just don't come up in living life like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a comic. Some people do. But some people go through some, like, very fucked up shit. And then be like, I need to, if I tell this on stage, this would probably be silly. And so, yeah, that's one of the things I actually looked into when it came to actually, you know, being a comic. That's what I asked a lot of people. I'm like, you know, how was your upbringing? Because most of the times, people's upbringing, it usually kind of sets their path to them becoming, you know, who they're going to be. And it's just so interesting to see how people got to where they are or to what makes them want to be who they are. Why they act the way they act now. You know, I like getting into the backstories of that. Because just like with Tony Frederick, like we was talking about that. Like I didn't know any of that shit until you just sit down and talk to him. And you know, you don't normally get those times to actually sit down and talk to somebody until you just got time to sit down and talk. And I like finding out certain things about certain people, especially how, you know, how their childhood was, because not everybody's had the same childhood. But whatever makes you become a comic, it didn't just dawn on you. It didn't just hit you right then and there. This is something that's been happening for quite some time. That was something I realized when I got older. I was like, oh, everything that happened to me in life was just setting me up basically on the path to do comedy, be a comedian, you know. But no one tells you that, no one knows that. You know, my parents just thought I was a fucked up kid. They were just like, you can't keep still. I don't know why. That's the reason why. Most of the comedians that I listen to, most of them, ADHD, ADD, can't keep still. Motherfuckers always think about some other shit, you know, not doing well in school.
So you're talking about just like not being able to like function in what was expected.
Exactly. Always, you know, thinking that people like, especially back then when I was learning about ADD and all that, it was like the people like that are very creative. And I was like, yeah, I am. You know, fuck history. Let me draw this dope ass fucking Napoleon on a boat with fucking swords and knives and braids in his head and shit. You know, so that's just kind of how my brain went. And the entire time when I'm supposed to be learning shit, and I'm thinking about, oh, what if I put an earring on his left ear? And he's like, wait, you can't have it on the left ear. That's the gay ear, so you got to put it on the right ear. You know, it's just like, I'm not paying attention to
scenarios.
Exactly. Like, who are you going to fight? Yeah, I don't know. You're going to fight some bad bitches or some shit like that. And so it's just like,
because school's boring, man.
Very boring.
I was falling asleep in school.
Very boring.
That was my thing. I would just be like, man, I'm out. Like, this ain't holding my attention.
Yeah. And I did well. I did really well in school to say I didn't give a fuck about it. You know, and I always wondered why I was able to do so good. It's just because, like, I couldn't, to this day, I still can't. I'm not one of those people that can read shit. But if something's read to me, I retain that information. You know, so.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not a big reading comprehension person. But if I can get it told to me, I'm good with it. And as I've gotten older, I've learned this about myself. And I'm like, oh, man, this is the only reason this was a struggle. But now, like, I definitely could eradicate why the fuck I was struggling and fix that situation. Back then, I had no idea. Motherfuckers like, now you just got problems. Here, take this hooked on phonics and see if that helps your reading.
Like, they say people, there's auditory learners and there's tactile learners and there's visual learners and stuff like that. Sounds like you might be an auditory learner.
I just wish there was more information back then. It would have been a lot easier. You know, I wouldn't have felt so bad about myself. I was like, I don't know why I can't. I mean, I still pass my tests and shit, but learning this way just isn't fun, and I don't want to do it. You know, but like other things that was taught to me. Through other means of learning, didn't seem like I was actually learning, but I was still retaining the knowledge. And it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is a lot better, you know, because it's not feeling that you're forcing something down my throat. Because
maybe you had a sense it wasn't practical or useful information too. I mean, I think that's a big one.
Yeah.
And learning.
None of that shit's useful. Back then, I was like, man, what am I going to use this for? I always thought about that. I'm like, all right, now when I get older, what will it be needed for?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is just, you just giving me useless knowledge that I'm not going to be able to use in the future. I mean, sure, if I want to have a conversation with somebody, but I'm not about to be a historian, so I don't give a fuck about this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just so happen to do electrical, so some math is in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, all the math and shit that I took, I'm like, I'm not about to do anything with that.
That's practical knowledge, man. I remember being in school. I could always, like, pick out a point where, like, you were learning applicable stuff versus mm-hmm. stuff that was theoretical. Sometimes you get to points where it was, like, built, it was like a theory upon a theory, and I was like, wait, like, hold up here, like,
yeah,
you're like dedicating this like study and knowledge to something that isn't even, the first step isn't even proven yet, and right. you're like taking it out to third, fourth, fifth step, like, wait, I don't know if this is worth everybody's time right here, you know, like, let's bring it back to something. Studying like a trade seems cool like that, because yeah, if you learn stuff, there's real implications, like you're gonna get fucking shocked or you're not gonna get shocked, for example.
That doing learning electrical was so fun, just for the fact that like I like hands on shit. I'm a person that's hands on.
Did you go to like Delgado's and like do a course or you?
What happened was I was with All Star Electric. Mm-hmm. And All Star Electric put you to school, and they had their own school. It's called ABC School. So I went to ABC School for 4 years for electrical, and
that's like in a classroom or you're like out doing on job apprentice stuff.
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, because what you got 2 weeks in the class and everything else you're working. Like, so as you're working, they put you through school. So you getting the hands-on and you getting the book knowledge at the same time, which I think most companies that are big like that, and if they got enough money, that they should do. And that's the way to go, because sure. that's how you learn the knowledge. Because hey, you get a lot of people that's book smart and like, oh, I know this, I know that, because I read up on it.
Yeah.
But I ain't never put my hands on it. So when they get out in the field, they don't know what the fuck to do. It's like, yeah, you can know everything about comedy because you read up on it and everything, but they get on stage. You ever been on stage yet? You don't know what that feel like.
Yeah.
Like, you, I mean, you read about it, and so mentally you know what it's like to be on stage because somebody told you, but you ain't never got that feeling. So until you get that feeling, you can't really say anything until you actually act upon it. So, you know, that's...
A big reason I left New York after, like, doing... It wasn't immediately after, but, like, somewhat after doing the MFA thing was it... I realized that like all the people that were writing in Brooklyn, you know, like there was like a short radius of like all these people that were like having books reviewed in the New York Times and were, you know, like, you know, celebrated contemporary writers were all over there. And I like tried to read, you know, like I went to the bookstore that I picked up. I'm going to like pick up a couple books of people that live within a mile of where I live in Brooklyn or whatever. And like, I couldn't get through any of them, man. They were terrible. There was just everybody like whacking each other off, like super up each other's, you know, patoots.
Yeah.
Trying to impress each other on this like arcane shit that had no grounding, had no chakra one. For this like very small audience of each other, trying to be more clever or trying to be, I don't even know what the fuck they were trying to do, honestly. But it was like so uninspiring because the books that meant stuff to me like fucking lit up my brain and like made me look at the world a new way. And this was like the most masturbatory kind mm-hmm. of pointless shit. So, and that was everybody. Everyone was just like caught in that little pocket. So that was like a, had to do with me.
It's crazy how shit like that takes over.
Leave it. But it's like, it's I think it's analogous to what you're saying too. Because if you're just looking at everything academically, you're missing a huge part of what's important.
Yeah.
And whether you're going to get shocked and fall off a power pole or whether you're just going to write shitty novels.
Yeah.
It's
similar. And so I put it like this, being a snake handler, being somebody that handles snakes, and you know, you can have the knowledge and all that about handling snake, but you don't. You know, you can tell the bite pressure of a snake, but until you've been bit, you don't really know what it's like to actually have that snake. You don't really know the power of what the snake can wield. And I've actually had snakes before. I've had big snakes.
Oh, yeah?
And I've never been bit by my snake yet, but I've always just in the back of my head just wondered, what is the feeling? What does it feel like? Just so I won't be as afraid the next time I go to handle it.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's just like with comedy or with anything else.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be as afraid. You're always going to be afraid the next time just because you haven't dealt with the situation yet.
Yeah.
And until that situation comes, and until you deal with it, you're always going to have it in the back of your head like, man, what is this going to be like? And I'm glad that I've gotten my feet in the water, and I'm like, I'm no longer like, you know, that person like, I wish I would have did comedy. I wish I would have got on stage that day when I thought about getting on stage.
There's no substitute for doing ever.
Yeah.
And if you got a big imagination, you can cook up like the incredible things and scenarios about what might go wrong, about how that snake might go, or, you know, snake might break left, or snake might break right. I don't know. I gotta be ready. I gotta cover all the angles.
You never get the full gist of things until you actually get into it. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy about comedy, because it's like, all right, people can talk all that talk, but it's one of the things that people really admire. When you tell somebody that you're a comic, that like their eyes like widen up. It's like, oh, I love comedy. I like to laugh. Oh, I'm like, that's amazing that you do that. You know, and it always looks like, you know, because I'm an electrician. I'm like, man, I could turn your lights on and shit. And, you know, I know I cut power off to a house. You know, that's not as exciting as telling somebody that you're a comic. And it's it boggles my mind. I'm like,
you know how people always go, oh, I can never do that. I can never do comedy. My response is always like, well, you don't know. Maybe you could, maybe you couldn't.
Right.
Or, you know, maybe you could figure it out. Like, but like, it's such a weird, hard stance to take. Like, oh, I can never do that.
Yeah.
It's, you got the tools, man. If you got a voice, you know, like,
it's right. Like, it's so it. Crazy. I'm like, but you could do it.
Yeah.
Anybody could do it. And people are like, man, I can't do that. It's like, you're not gonna lose your life doing it. Like, what do you mean?
You should see some people to do it. They fucking suck. You might be doing us a favor taking one of those slots.
Oh man, hold on. I'm gonna pause this because I have to. Right back at it. Beep, woo, fucking Seltzer.
So clean, man. You're not even feeling it going through.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that is a clean pee.
It's so, like, it's making me think about how you see so many comics and so many people, like, they're in the mainstream now, too, that are talking about people just getting on stage and talking, you know?
Like, yeah.
People, there seems to be more of a premium on your own voice and your own story and experience and whatever, and identity and this kind of stuff, instead of, like, you know, less emphasis maybe on crafting jokes and surprise and the stuff that moves me the most about comedy is, I think, is surprise, you know, taking people one way, sending them another way.
Yes, the misdirection. I always think about that.
Just stuff.
That
fires the brain, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's
get
that's,
you thinking.
That's what I love about comedy. You know, like Norm Macdonald, I love, you know, that, like, he's like, that's whole, his MO seems to be in that realm. You know, I love Cat Williams. I love Cat Williams. Yeah. You know, he does surprises with his body. He does surprises with everything, man. Yeah.
When you say
constant misdirection going.
Yes. When you say it like that, like, I just recently watched this movie again. This is why this is coming up. But I think of Lucky Number 11, the Kansas City Shuffle.
Uh-huh.
In the beginning of the movie, Bruce Willis goes up to this guy, and he's just a nobody. He's going to take his life. And he talks to him about the Kansas City Shuffle. When everybody looks one way and you go the other way, and then boom, he snaps this nigga's neck. And it's like, that's awesome. That's exactly how I look at this shit when the whole act of misdirection when it comes to jokes, how you take these people this way
And, you know, they're all looking that way. But then, boom, you all the way over here. Boom, Kansas City Shuffle. You fucking hit them with a whammy. And they're not ready for it. And it's like, shit, yeah. You didn't see that coming, did you? And I love that aspect of it. Pay the man.
That's
it.
Yeah. You got Shuffle.
Yeah. I love that aspect of comedy. It's like magic, man.
It's the same with music, too, right? Like, yeah. When you're like, Stonks starts off, you're like, okay, I know where this is going. And then someone hits you and you're like, whoa.
Whoa, where'd that come from? Yeah. Wasn't ready for that. Yeah, it's just once you get into like the actual realm of being a comedian, like once you get into like the spirit of comedy, like there's so many doors that start to open. Like before, when I just used to see commercials and television, I used to be like, oh, look at these people and doing these commercials on TV. And then when I got into comedy, I'm like, that's a comedian. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a comedian. Uh-huh. Oh, most of these motherfuckers are comedians. I'm like, oh shit, man, you just out here trying to just work. Yeah. And I'm like, it didn't dawn. Things started to open up after I became, it felt like I became like the more important person in the world. Just because like most people in life want either to be the comedian or just to be there while the comedian is making people laugh. It's like, because this is, you know, besides me working and shit, I need to be able to take a load off and I want somebody to make me laugh. Either I want to be the person that makes people laugh or I want to be in front of the person that makes people laugh. Yeah. And it's like, so we basically ruling the world.
It's because something's happening, dude.
Yeah.
I'm stoked you went to LA and I always thought, like, in my imagination, I was like how would it be perfect to be on commercials, to be on, you know, like sitcoms, to show up on a sitcom, you know, like be a character on episode of a sitcom, because he's hilarious and he brings all that energy.
And yeah.
I'm curious, because I don't know too much about your time in LA. Like, I know you did that Comedy Central video, the
Short Kings.
Short Kings.
Yeah.
Like, how did you get connected? How did you get involved?
Glad you asked this question. Yeah. I get to tell it with through somebody else asking the question. Okay, now this is how this happened, because this is Hollywood and this is how shit fucking just trickles down. All right, I did a show with Jupiter, and he has a show called The Shit Show. Shit Show and Shit Post.
Jupiter is a person.
Yes. Okay. Jupiter's a guy, and he has an internet reality show that he does at the Pack Theater. And I learned about the Pack Theater from Justin Lane. You know, you remember Justin Lane? Mm-hmm. He was down here. He was a comic that died. He moved up to LA. Uh-huh. Yeah. He used to do his shows, Black Comic Theater or something like that. Something. He used to do a show there as well. And that's why I learned about the Pack Theater. And then he told me that after his show, they have another show called Shit Post. And that I should check out that show. So I was like, all right, cool. I checked out that show, and then he introduced me to the people that do that show. And I was like, all right. So one day, I just went to the show randomly, and I decided that, I was sitting in the audience just watching the show. And what they do is, through one of the segments, they bring somebody to the stage. They bring people to the stage, you know, to interact with whatever's going on. Because it's an internet show, they put posts up and all that, and you get to fucking comment on the post. So they brought me up, and they brought this other dude up. And they asked the crowd, they was like, who likes to smoke weed? And, you know, I'm like the only other black guy in there. You know, I got my bun up high and shit. I look different, you know, so I'm like, hey, you know, I stand out a bit. And I'm like, hey, I smoke, you know, I'm already high. And so they bring me to the stage to go ahead and partake in one of these segments. And they bring somebody else on there, and I'm like, all right, cool. So we go to the back. They tell us what we're going to do. Hey, we're going to bring these up. Hey, smoke this joint.
Oh, this is like involved. It wasn't just like, come up for a minute. Okay.
No. Like, no, this is the whole segment that y'all going to do. We just kind of like Nickelodeon, when you bring people from the audience and you tell them what they're going to do and they get slimed and shit afterward. That's how it was. They brought me to the back. And they was like, hey, this is what it's going to be. The segment is, y'all going to get high and all that. I'm like, I'm already high. They're like, well, good. This is going to be even better for you. So I get there. And then we get high. We smoke. We come come back to the stage and we go ahead and we critique some pictures that they put up. Mm-hmm. And like the dude that was with me, apparently he might have not got the memo. It's like he wanted to be honest. I was like, be honest, nigga, just be retarded. Like, they're not asking for honesty.
It's a show,
man. It's a show. And he was like, oh, well, I think the cat looks like a cat. And I'm like, man, the cat looks like a spaceship that's eating pussy or some shit like that. And, you know, the entire time, I'm just giving these fucking wild-ass answers and shit. Mm-hmm. And this dude, he loses. Mm-hmm. He doesn't win. They give me a Star Wars box set because I won. And they give me some others. They give me like 3 cans of Mountain Dew because there was this thing. They just had Mountain Dew for some reason. Uh-huh. So they just gave me. They gave that to me. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I won. So I'm feeling good.
I thought LA was healthier than that, but.
Not at all.
That's the last Mountain Dew in all of LA.
The homeless people smell worse than piss out there. But I won. So they gave me, you know, the prizes and shit, and I felt good, and, you know. So me being myself, I was like, "Fuck that! Let's throw a back tuck in the middle of the situation," you know. So I do a backflip. I did a backflip in the middle, and nigga, the place erupted. So they were not ready for that, and they was like, "Oh my god! Oh shit!" And I was like, "They was like, oh man, do you want something else?" And I was like, "Yeah." And that's when they gave me the more prizes and shit. And then I sat down, and from then
Oprah
on,
popped
son,
out of the bag.
It would have been nice if Oprah came out. And from then on, son, every place I would go, Jeff Buck. You know Jeff Buck?
I know who he is. I never met him. But,
yeah. Jeff Buck had a roommate, and his roommate, he's a PA assistant to video shoots and shit. Mm-hmm. So, he got a somebody asked him from his production. It's like, hey, do you know somebody small that might be pretty charismatic for a video shoot? Uh-huh. And he was like, I know the perfect person. Uh-huh. And somebody else got asked the same question, and it was somebody that was working on the shitpost production. Uh-huh. Somebody asked them. They was like, hey, do you know somebody small that's very charismatic? Uh-huh. And they was like, hey, uh-huh. I know the perfect person. And it's like, this little small black kid just did a backflip on the stage. Very charismatic. Let's go bring him in. And so I get those.
He might not
two.
Pass the drug test, but he's yeah. the guy for the job.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. The fucking Jeff Buck roommate uh-huh. hits me up. Uh-huh. And then the next day, the person that was doing the production on the shit post, they hit me up.
No shit.
And they're like, hey, do you want to be in a video shoot? We need somebody small about your size. I was like, fuck yeah. And it was like, how much does it pay? You know what? Doesn't matter how much it pays. This is a video shoot in LA. I'm taking off work. So I was like, fucking right. And I took off work. I took off work that day, which was something that is detrimental to me. I do not take off work. Uh-huh. Ever in my life.
Do you tell them the truth or do you get sick that day?
I did not tell them the truth.
That's what you gotta do.
I did not tell them that I was sick. I just told them I had something to do because, bitch, I'm an adult and you only need to know what the fuck I'm doing.
I learned that in the restaurant, bitch. Yeah. Someone's like got Yankees tickets and they're like, hey, my father-in-law got me Yankees tickets. Like, motherfucker, you better be dead or you better be in the restaurant. There's no one else to fucking bring the food out, bro.
Yeah.
Don't ever tell me you're going to Yankees.
No, yeah. Don't say where yeah. you're going. No, yeah. I didn't tell them I was going to do some fun shit. Yeah. I just told them I got shit to take care of. And they was like, oh, okay, do your thing. So I took off and I get to the place where they're actually doing a video shoot. And when they're doing a video shoot, then it's a 3-story mansion. Okay. And this place is big. We walk into just the second story.
Shit.
Walk up to the second story. Yeah. Nigga, the pool's on the third story. I mean, you gotta go up some stairs, up man. Like a fucking bridge, fucking type of moat, castle type shit, just to get to the pool area. And at the bottom is, you know, beds and
I've
all that shit.
I've never seen a pool in the sky before.
Oh,
that's
my
insane,
God.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. Man. I was like, I don't know if I need to be here at this moment in time. It was wild. And I was like, I'm glad I'm here. But when I got there, like, I ran into the chick that she does production for the shit post. She was like, oh, man, I'm glad you're here, man. I told everybody about you and shit. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, what'd you tell them? She was like, you know, that you're amazing and everything. I'm like, cool, thanks. And then I ran into my partner that's roommates with Jeff Buck. He was like, oh, man, I didn't know you was going to be here. What the fuck are you doing here? I was like, well, somebody said, you know, that they needed somebody small. He was like, fuck yeah, this is amazing. And he was the guy that, he's a PA, so he's a personal assistant. Uh-huh. I didn't know what a PA did until I ran into this nigga. Uh-huh. And basically, he just goes fetching shit. And I was like, this is a terrible job, man. How you get, how much you get paid for this? The motherfucker had to pick us up in the van. He was like, I'm the van driver. I'm like, all right. We get to the place, he was like, I deliver the snacks. I was like, what? This is a bitch ass job, my nigga. Right. But all right, do your thing. You know, we
from
get
10
there.
To 12, I gotta take abuse, and then I'm back on the band at 11.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, do your thing. He's like, we get paid nicely. Do you? Do you really?
People. I find they fall in that sort of trap where they're like, I'm gonna be a PA because I'm gonna be around people that are like decision makers and powerful and this and that. And it's like, yeah, but they're also gonna. You're gonna be a bitch to them forever.
Yeah, go like, get the grapes, my nigga.
And it's gonna be a hard time breaking out of that mold in their brain.
I felt
dilemma
so bad for. I was like, I don't know. This is not what I would want to do, nigga. The whole time I was there, I sat down and I was like, I'm not used to being on the clock, not doing shit. You know, I'm like, bitch, y'all need a plug to be checked or something, nigga. I can check your lights. I can see if your lights are working. See what bulbs are out.
I feel that.
Give me something to do. I was like, I can't do that. And like,
I had a catering gig last week, and I was about to lose my mind because there's nothing to do. They hired too many people. I was like, let me wash some dishes.
I'm like, bitch, you just paying me to sit here?
The dishes. The cooks were like, man, you sure you want to wash those dishes? Like, I'm going to lose my mind, man.
I got to do something. Time ain't going to go by if I'm not doing nothing. Yeah. And like the longer I was there, the more and more people came up and was like, hey, I know you. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know you. Like, I'm new out here. Like, how do you know me? And it become, did you do a backflip on a stage or shit posting? I was like, yeah, I did do that. It was like, oh my God, you were the guy. I was like, yeah, that's me. And it's like, oh man, you're amazing, dude. You're so goddamn funny. And I got that for the rest of the day, son. Most people just coming up, hey. Did you do a backflip on stage at the shitpost? I'm like, yeah, I did. It's like, oh, man, it's so good to see you, dude. You're fucking hilarious. I'm like, thanks, man. I didn't know, you know. And see, that's how that led to that video shoot. Just because of those few, like, incidences where motherfuckers was like, oh, I know somebody small. And it's like, I know somebody charismatic. And it's like, wow, this is how the Hollywood magic works. It doesn't take long either. It doesn't take, and that it's just like gambling. That's what'll get you stuck and that's what'll get you hooked. Because that shit comes like it's not as often.
Yeah.
But it's enough to be like, man, I wonder what's gonna happen tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's wild out there. It was wild. That sounds
dumb, man. It was shut down when I was out there. There was no one was running into anybody.
And see, the crazy thing is, because
I love watching your comedy, by the way, man. That reminds me. I'm just gonna compliment you because like fucking, you had. I'll never forget. You did like 8 minutes on tripping over the mat
at Popeyes. Yeah.
I was. Dying, man. You had me fucking
so pissed at that Popeyes.
Couldn't breathe because you did 8 minutes on fucking tripping over the mat. And I was ready to fucking rise up and fight against that, the injustice. So that,
Popeyes with no drive-thrus, man. Fuck them Popeyes.
I love how you can just be like high intensity funny for long stretches of time, man. That's awesome.
That's a unique
thing.
I'm just so happy that people are like actually listening, because this is something that I tell to my brother, because it'd be something that pissed me off, and it's like he's gonna listen regardless because he's my brother. But to have other people be like, oh man, what you went through, oh that's fucked up, let me know more. And you know, people are listening. Like I did that at a wedding. It was my homie Wayne Barris. Shout out Wayne for the MHOG podcast. He was getting married that day, and I was supposed to be the host, and my brother was gonna marry them because he's an ordained. He got the license to go ahead and marry people.
You're talking about Big Kyle.
Yeah. He loves that too. Yeah. And he was gonna marry me, and it was like, you gonna be the host. And I was like, all right. So I went up there and I started doing bits. Because I didn't know when it was time. It was like, just stall them. I was like, okay. And I was like, let me let y'all know about this Popeyes. I ain't got no drive-thru. And in the middle of it, I think there's...
That's the first time you did the bit?
Was it? Yeah. Yeah, because it just happened. It just happened. And in the middle of it, I'm in this motherfucker like a goddamn a person in a heavy metal band just fucking swinging my hair like, fuck this Popeyes. Fuck this Popeyes. And I had people in the crowd like, yeah, fuck this Popeyes. I'm like, son, it was so fun. And just to be able to like have people on your side for something so, so off the wall. It's like, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. Like, why am I constantly doing this electrical job when this is what I'm supposed to do? Because I don't get paid to do what I love just yet. So it's just like, I need the funds to do what I love until I don't need those funds anymore and I can just do what I love and the funds come. And this is...
I feel like there's some people too that do better when they stay busy and when you have new stimulation coming in instead of just like being in your apartment like hunched over a notepad all day or something like that. Like
I can't do it that way. Yeah,
I'm the same way, man. I've tried to do it the other way and I just like fucking get depressed and go to sleep.
Yeah,
it's not funny, dude. Like.
I'm glad you said that.
I can do anything. I could go on an errand, you know, like I could go get, like work a job or whatever, and I come back like more energized and with more stuff to talk about. And I think it's better for comedy. I mean, I don't know if that's the same for everybody, but I think it's interesting.
It's definitely not. I'm glad you said that. It really opened something up in my mind just now because I'm not one of those people that can just sit down and be like, all right. This is what I'm going to work on. My brain does not work that way. It's like, oh, you about to give yourself homework? Nigga, you know you don't like homework. You know what I'm saying?
There's a dude I live with in LA who's the same way. Like, he worked this job at Goodwill. And he's a musician. And he's really good, man. He makes enough money that he could probably get by, he'd be like, you know, eating mac and cheese, but, you know, could probably survive just on Spotify downloads or whatever. But he keeps his job at Goodwill. And I think it has to do with him like just having something to do and like having new stimulation and being outside the house and stuff like that.
Definitely.
And it's low stress too.
Yeah.
We talked earlier about like formative struggle, you know, leading people into comedy and stuff like that. I think it's probably a reason that Jewish people are so funny, right? Is because they immediately have their parents cut the tip of their dick off when they're a small child. They have less than a day in the world, and they have obscene trauma delivered upon them by those who love them the most.
Yeah, and the people that go through the most trauma is the ones that come out, especially if you want to do comedy, the ones that come out on the better end of comedy. When would you say that you found your voice on stage, if you found it yet?
Honestly, I've just started to find it. I feel like I have broken through something. And it isn't even about finding, it's honestly been more about preparation to go on stage and it has about like finding a certain angle or finding a certain whatever. Yeah. It's been for me more about getting centered and like comfortable to go on instead of like trying to fit something or trying to imitate something or trying to craft something, whatever. It's instead of crafting, you're expressing and using your own rhythms and using your own lens on things.
And then
obviously like crafting jokes and surprises on that. Yeah, like it's been fun playing with like accelerating and decelerating, you know, rhythm, is a tool or something that I've learned recently.
Yeah. Recently we've been talking for the past few podcasts that I've been having that I've been mentioning that Kamar put it best because I was like, oh, when I speed myself up, and he was like, when you accelerate your pace, I was like, oh, that's what you should say. That's the things you should say. Yeah, accelerating pace and when you slow things down. James Jermaine came up to me Monday, and he was like, man, I keep bringing this up because I didn't think about it until I got off stage when he told me. He was like, dude, that's all. I like how you do that. And he was like, I like how you take yourself to where, you know, if you're explaining something, you can get loud about it
and just to go ahead and explain your point, but then you also bring it back, and you know the way your inflections are never the same. You know,
speed
things up, and then how
it's very dynamic.
I flow into it.
Yeah, some people that rant don't have any dynamics to it. You know, you look at like, I don't know, like Lewis Black or some shit like that, and like he's just doing the same cadence basically, and it's boring. But yeah, there's never the same thing.
It brings you here, and because certain things people are intense, and it comes down. It's like, oh, you've calmed me down with your inflections, and then I get you, and then you know it can ramp up, and then it can slow down. But the pace, I treat it like Flow Rider. I like to ride the beat, even though there's no beat. I like to keep a type of flow to it, so people are still like they pay attention, but they're not paying attention to just one thing. That we hit a bump in the road, like boom, oh now we're here now. It's like, oh shit, what's happening? Yeah. And so he looked at that and he saw that and he was like, man, that's. I fucking like how you do that.
It's like a twisty roller coaster.
Yeah,
you're going around.
Yeah,
Jermaine's like a
Jermaine's like, you know, I'm saying this.
Yeah, you know, Edward, this, you know, I'm talking about this.
Yeah,
right. Then brings it all the way back to it. It's like, I don't know. I should probably kill myself.
And then people
and
like
then he's back up the roller coaster.
Where did we go just now? To where when you actually get a good roller coaster that goes through tips, dips, turns, and lets you see some scenery before it takes you back up again.
Yeah, dude.
It's like, that's the things there that people actually pay attention. People that can actually gravitate to instead of just like, oh, he's going a mile a minute. When are we going to stop? He's going to hit a wall and we're going to crash at some point.
Uh-huh,
and,
uh-huh.
You know, it crashes. But then it's like, you know, I know where the brake at. I know where the cones are at. I'm about to make this left right here. Y'all come with me. You know? And so, like, for him to say that.
That's such a good metaphor. That's how it is.
Yeah. It was, I'm like, man, because it's been a year.
Uh-huh.
It's been literally a year since I've been on stage to be able to actually tell jokes. And when
I did it three times since. Wait, the first time I did it was maybe 2 weeks ago now.
But yeah,
in the last year, starting 2 weeks ago, I did the comedy for a whole year, and then I've done it three times.
How'd that feel,
dude? I honestly think I did better with a year's break because in that time I got more grounded. And
you got time to reflect.
Got time to reflect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just fun and exciting to be back doing it again.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, getting that hit of the drug again. So, I was nervous as hell. You know,
Got to get the bubble guts back. Yeah. The butterflies always come back. I was very nervous. They put me on Get You Right at the boxing, Get You Right Boxing up off
Elite Fields.
Yeah, shout out Jorge. Yeah, he put me on fucking. Shout out Michelle Poole once again, because she was like, hey, you can take my time at the end. I was like, she was just going to squeeze me on. I just wanted to come, you know, just see. And he was going to squeeze me on. He was like, I'll give you 5 minutes. And Michelle was like, yeah, you can take my time. And she gave me some of her time.
Jorge booked me from quarantine for that Saturday show with Pickle.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was like, hey. You want to do 10 minutes on the show on Saturday? He's like, don't worry about me. I'm just stuck in my apartment for 2 weeks. Don't feel bad about me. You have fun. You go ahead. You do it.
Man, they've been doing their thing down here, son. And I was so happy. And they put me on the end of the show, and it was like, you want to do 15? I was like, sure. You know, you going to throw me to the wolves right soon? I haven't been on stage since I got you. And you did that 15.
That's a challenge, man. That's a good challenge.
I was like, oh, man, it felt so good because I didn't have to rush anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to think things through. I could just be myself. And I was like, this was the perfect way to come back. Perfect way to come back and do a 15 and I have to rush it through and just get my bits out. I was like, fuck. Yeah. I threw a new bit in there that worked well. I'm like, oh, nigga, Kyle's back on the bike again.
Yeah.
All right, you motherfuckers, just scoot over because, bitch, I'm coming to the open mic bench. Man, this felt I knew it was
you killed last night at Gasa Gasa. That was that was hype.
I've been just enjoying being able to be back on stage again, and I've almost lost like love
for like what we normally do. It seemed like it was just a dream that like, man, oh nigga, you ain't gotta be on stage. You was just nigga, this is just stuff in your memory. And it's like, no, but this
even
is
what fucking seeing human beings, man, was became a fantasy.
Yeah,
dude, it was crazy.
Man, and I'm so glad to be back doing what I love and just like knowing that I haven't, I thought that I was going to be like, oh man, I've lost it. Like, I don't know how to ride this bike no more. Until I got back, I went to Homegrown. I did. I hit it.
Oh, you hit tonight?
Yeah.
Oh, tight. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. I was able to get on. I was like, I ain't going to be here long. I got to hurry up and go.
I still got to check that one out. I haven't been to that yet.
Nigga, Jorge and them, nigga, they racking up with these mics.
Nice, man.
Nigga,
when I was in LA, by the way, I would have fully lost my mind if it weren't for me doing Lyft driving and just being able to encounter strangers and have a little chit chat on a regular basis.
Man, I appreciate what the fuck they're doing. Yeah. And when things pop back off, motherfuckers better be on their grind because they got their shit up. They got shit established. The motherfuckers that were there, the randos, thinking we ain't get randos like that on a normal basis.
How many audience was there?
Shit, they had a table that was there for one chick. They had like five people there, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, but at least 25, 30
that's
people.
That's pretty
there.
Fucking cool.
Yeah,
dude. Hell yeah,
yeah, hell yeah, and that this is oh, you don't know these jokes. This is genuine laughter. Like, so I get to go ahead and get loosey-goosey with it. I'm like, man.
I'm getting excited. It's here. My heart's beating a little quicker.
I've been having it since I've been down here because, you know, fucking Texas, they tripping. So I'm like, nah. And you don't get the same type of love in Texas. Like, they still got places to do open mics, but it's like, yeah, y'all ain't getting the people in there. Like, we getting people.
They don't have an audience. It's just other comics and shit.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. But I ain't been everywhere, though. Yeah. So I can't really say for everything. But, you know, I don't really know the scene just yet. And it don't feel the same. It don't feel the same. So I'm like, man, let me just, you know, I knew once I came down here, I was gonna definitely get on some mics and I was going to get back into the swing of things. And that's exactly what I needed to do because I haven't been on stage since, you know, for that whole year. So this is the perfect place for me to get back, get my feet wet again, get my beak moist and get back out there. And I can't wait. I can't wait. I don't want to go back to working. I just want to keep traveling and see how far I can go. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know how fucking funds and shit would be paid for, but unemployment is still paying a nigga. So I can run like that for a minute.
Yeah, dude.
I don't know though. I get so weirded
like the
out.
South doing the Gulf, like maybe. We should go to Florida is what we should do.
Florida's a place because Corey's out there. Corey told me to come.
Corey's in Florida?
There. Yeah.
Do you know Anna Lepley who came through here a while ago? She's always doing shows in Florida and she said, yeah, it's like holler if you're going that way.
I definitely need to get my face out more. Yeah, like I want to do the road. I want to be a road comic.
Yeah, me too, man.
I want to start making money from doing the road, and I also want to get to the point to where like I can get to the I can do festivals. But I've never done a festival. I've never been on a festival ever, and so I would like to get, I would like to at least be on one or two, or just, you know, be around friends that are on a festival or something like that. I want to be more in tune to the comedy. I want to be more in tune to actually, you know, being a comic. Because I'm not one of those people that read up on comics or, you know, fucking listen to all the comedy Bibles and shit like that. And I figured this out yesterday. I'm not that guy, but I'm still a good comic. So it's just like, as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, because I'm a fan and I like, once I get into something that I like doing, I get really good at doing it. Mm-hmm. Just like being a unicyclist. Like, once I got into doing it, like, I didn't look up, you know, what I should do or how I should do it. I was like, this is what I want to do. And I just, you know, fucking did it from there. And it like, the more and more you do something, you do one of something, you're going to get really good at it. And so, you know, not to brag or anything like that, but within 2 days, I was able to mount and fucking ride my unicycle as soon as I got it. And I figured that was, I slept on it. I was like, you know, when people say, "Oh, just sleep on it, it'll come to you." That's what I did. I slept on it a day, and boom, I was able to ride it the next day. I was like, "Oh my god, I'm gonna tell everybody, this is magic."
There's no substitute for doing it, man. That's just what. Yeah. That's exactly the shit that we were talking about, man. I don't know how long a book could be about unicycle riding, but you could read that over and over again. It wouldn't be worth a fucking thing. You got to feel it out.
Right.
You got to get on the unicycle and you got to ride it.
Yeah.
I taught myself to juggle the same way. You're like this is impossible. And then I just put my mind to it, and I like went in the room, and I think I was probably like, 90 minutes or something like that, and then it finally clicked in, and like, okay, now I can do it.
Strange when things just start click.
But you just gotta keep, and you gotta be aware, and you gotta make those small adjustments and tweaks until you find it.
I want that to happen with my bass guitar, but I put it down.
Oh, dude, I just bought a bass, man.
I saw that. Yeah. I see that you have these instruments there.
And I mean, I'm rusty as hell, but I used to play guitar. I had a band like in high school and college age. Like, yeah. we were fucking good, man. We were on the rock radio station there in San Francisco. We were gigging all around the Bay Area.
What was your band name?
We were called Harry Truman. But Harry? It was spelled HairyTrue. M-E-N. Yeah,
come
and
on.
It was it's pretty dumb, but once you get a name and people know it, you gotta stick with it. But man, yeah, I mean it was fun. It was fun as hell, man. And I miss that. I miss like playing in the group like that. You know, where you come, the sum is greater than, or the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, whatever that saying is. But I'm rusty as hell on the guitar, but I've always wanted to pick up the bass, and I finally got on Craigslist and got a little cheap bass for myself, and I'm gonna start trying to play it.
Fuck yeah! So you already got the.
Did
music
you play music when you were coming up?
Or no, what? No. My mom and them, I actually had to learn piano and shit.
Yeah.
Coming up, but
I wish I'd been forced to learn piano. Actually,
yeah, I didn't stick to it at all. So it's just like, all right, music theory, it's in my face. I got the concept. I can get close around to getting it, but one thing to the other, it's like I can't. It doesn't come together. Like it should, and I've been trying to teach myself the bass for a minute when I was in LA. I put it down for now because I'm like, this is just too much. But I definitely want to, because I want to, if I do learn how to play the bass, I'm definitely incorporating that into my stand-up or my poetry or wherever it goes, because whatever extra, that's just like, nigga, I'm building a Gundam. My Gundam got a fucking a side pistol.
It's a different world now with YouTube, because you can learn stuff. So it's so much more accessible to get someone to teach you something on a video is such a difference than when I was a kid, man. It's awesome.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Fuck yeah.
I don't know, fixing stuff on your car or whatever. You just be like, I'm just gonna hop on YouTube and I'm just gonna do this.
Son. Being in LA, like, I lost my first car that I had. That bitch got, something happened to that motherfucker. It was done. It got totaled and shit. Had to get another car. Got another car. And that car there, I had to be Mr. Mechanic.
I remember hearing about this. Yeah.
I only got so much money. Yeah. I only got so much money. I still got to pay for rent and everything. I gotta make sure I can live. And then also, I got to want to be able to get across town. And oh my God, son, I became the mechanic for my vehicle, because I'm like, well, if I can change this, I'm pretty sure I can change the fucking head to this fucking engine. And, try to go ahead and refurbish this engine.
You did an engine head?
Oh, nigga, I got close to the point to where I thought I was gonna do that, and I was like, nah. Nah, my gasket blew my engine, and fucking it welded the engine shut. Oh. So yeah, it was that.
That's a problem.
What is a problem? That bitch not come on ever again. I was able to fucking get that bitch pushed back to the house.
Time to retire the auto. With the,
oh man, at that age, that motherfucker lasted a few months. I paid like $3,000 for it.
Bro, there's nothing worse than paying a lot of money for someone and then shit immediately starts going wrong on that.
Immediately,
fucking thing.
Oh, like dude. I realized that it had a blown gasket like 2 weeks in after I got it. And that's when I started shaking after that, just because I'm like, oh, this is a blown gasket 2 weeks in after I got this, after I bought this off this dude, and I'm like, man, it don't go into fourth gear. That bitch only stays in it doesn't go in the fifth. It got four cylinders, but only three of them work. That bitch don't go in the fifth. Yeah, I can't. Shit, that was some terrible times, man.
There's no days off for cylinders, man. Everyone's got to show up when you fucking turn the car on.
That bitch only goes so fast. Nigga, I got mountains and hills.
What you got there now? You got a Corolla out there? Is that what you got?
Oh, no. That's a Scion.
That's a Scion?
Yeah. That's a Scion TC. Yeah, oh, that motherfucker there, that bit.
That's a durable. That's a soldier.
Is it?
Man.
Yeah, is it? Yeah. Oh my God! Son. Yeah. Like I've read about the Reddits on there. People's like, man, I've had this thing since such and such, and the engine still hasn't gone. It's a Camry engine in there. And Camry engines, they don't die.
No.
Yeah, they last for a very long time. So all I gotta worry about is, you know, because it's a very cheap car because it's a Scion.
Yeah.
So everything on the inside and all that, it looked pretty. It looked real nice. Everything on the inside, cheap as fuck. And yeah, it's like, all right, I can deal with that though. As long as it gets me from point A to point B. Then all I need is a go-kart with a frame. Basically, that's what it is. Go-kart with a nice looking frame on it.
Yeah.
It fucking sounds nice when it drives off and shit. Yeah. And it's a stick shift, so not everybody can steal
it. Ooh.
Yeah.
I'll drive a stick shift. It's fun, man. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you scoped out the chick magnet that was in the driveway on your way in there. No, that's Alex's car.
Oh.
I got that 2005 light blue, baby blue Prius.
Oh, it's a stick?
No.
Oh.
it's half electric. It goes. That's it doesn't even have a gear shift. It has a little knob where you go.
Oh, wow. That's the one that cut off when you go to the red lights and shit.
Yeah,
huh?
No, it hasn't really been getting me a lot of dates, this car. But I'll tell you what, dude, the thing, I drove it here from L.A. My brother's like, you sure it's going to make it all the way across the country?
It.
And I was like,
yeah.
Are you sure you want to ask me that question, man? This car's made it 16 years, bro. It's got 230,000 miles and isn't, you know, no stopping this thing.
Prius is going to be those post-apocalyptic cars.
Exactly
that's like,
right, dude.
Well, this car works. God damn it. I got to ride a Prius.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zombie land all the way. It's like, I don't want to be in a caravan. Caravan still works, man.
Yeah, I mean, you can fit the Gatling gun in there, too. It's got all that space and the hatchback and everything.
Yeah.
That's exactly the car you want for the fucking apocalypse.
All you need to do is charge that bitch up. And it also takes gas as well, right?
Yeah.
Man, you can't beat a Prius.
Yeah.
Priuses are something else. Oh, but good. Man, this has been a fun fucking time. Before we get off. I like to ask a few questions because this is Tell Me a Joke, but we do not tell jokes here. We just give bits and talk about life stories and life situations and what it takes to chase a dream. So since we all are jokers on this podcast here, what joker do you say best embodies you? Would you say you best embody?
What joker?
Yeah.
Like which portrayal of the Joker in a movie?
Yeah. Yes. Movies, cartoons, series.
I never did comic books, man. You do comic books?
Yeah.
Yeah. People love comic books, man. People.
My brother was more of a comic book fan. Yeah. I just learned from what I learned from him. So, you know.
I come up on conversations outside comedy show. Like Mike Hall loves talking about comic books. Yeah. A bunch of people love, and it's like they're gossiping, but they're talking about comic book characters, and they'll go for hours. And I'm just so confused and befuddled by the whole thing,
yeah.
but I love the passion around it. Man, what Joker? You're saying the character Joker. Jokester.
Jokers. The actual Joker. People that play the Joker. You got Heath Ledger.
You got
the Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah, Adam West.
I'm old enough to remember fucking Jack. What's his name?
Jack Nicholson. Joker.
Jack Nicholson. Yeah. Joker. No, that was Jack Pounce. Because you are my number one guy, which is seared in my memory 30 years ago. Whatever the fuck that was. But let me think about this. My favorite Joker, the one that I most like. I'm taking out Joaquin Phoenix. I didn't like his vibe. He was a little too.
This is intense.
A little too intense and dark. There's no fun in that man's life. And
that's true. Okay.
There's I didn't see Jared Leto, but I could do without Jared Leto as
no
an actor.
Can,
and
no
a,
one cares for him.
And a human being, so I'm going to knock him out of contention also. So, dude, it would be Ledger. Ledger?
Yeah.
I like Ledger because he nailed it. Like he was funny and he was bombastic.
Yeah.
And but he was also dark.
So dark.
And nihilistic and also philosophical. And I like that. Yeah, that seemed like the truest and the most grounded and most compelling of the Jokers to me.
Yeah. Some people picked the Mark Hamill Jokers, the ones because he played the cartoon Jokers.
Mark Hamill?
Mark Hamill, the Luke Skywalker.
The guy from Star Wars? Really?
Yeah. He plays Joker. He plays Joker.
Really?
Yeah.
Like just the voice.
The voice, the Joker.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Huh.
And so
that's
most
odd. That never would have.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It is so good.
He's such a sincere, nice boy in Star Wars. That's funny that he would play a villain.
But his voice acting, just what he does, is like, you're really good at what you do. Yeah. So his persona, he can play just about anybody. And yeah, people gravitate towards that. It's like, oh, the Joker, the other Joker, Mark Hamill.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I also want to die doing what I love, like Heath Ledger did in the Joker.
Oh, really?
Giving it all to the role of Joker. That's another nice aspect of the Joker. He played that so good he couldn't go on anymore.
Oh man.
What's yours?
Usually depending on how I'm feeling that day, I usually like to go with the Joaquin Joker, just because he's a more sadistic, straightforward type of Joker. I'm just that was more of my depressive state though.
Yeah.
When I was feeling that way, now it's probably more of an animated series type Joker. I think the Joker from the Arkham Asylum, the game. I think I would choose that Joe just because I'm feeling a bit better about myself now. I mean, you know, I would like to go about life like usual, and that's what I'm trying to do. And so that's basically what he was doing on there. He's just, I'm gonna be the Joker and I'm gonna do what I do. So yeah, I'm gonna go with that Joker.
I'm glad to hear that report. The Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie, I had so many problems with that movie. Like, there are aspects of it that were good, but like when it went into the fantasy thing where he was imagining himself with the woman, and there was like no setup from the narrative perspective, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just confusing. There was no coherence to the structure of the movie. That pissed me off, because I'm willing to like go with you on the journey. And there were some things I liked about that movie, but it didn't hold up internally for me, and I can never get absorbed in it, and I could never get it was not working.
Yeah, well that's fucking good, man.
But I wish I had made a joke. Fuck, dude, this I almost forgot.
Oh no, no, you don't need that.
This is exactly
what happens on this podcast. Like there's no jokes that's ever told. It's called Tell Me a Joke. The guideline of Chasing the Dream. But it's because like as comedians, like we're not those people that just like have jokes on hand and it's the worst thing that you can tell a comic. Yeah. Like tell me a joke. Like we don't do it like that. Yeah. Like you gotta like come to my show, bitch. You know? That's one of the things we do. So it's always good just to hear the backstories of comedians, and that's what I was saying about Ryan Sickler. How he has his comedians on there, and you hear the backstories of them because all comedians are insane and just in the head and shit. Uh-huh. And when it comes to being able to tell a backstory of what got you to where you're at now and why you're the person you are,
and they think about that.
Yeah,
shit.
It's some of the fucking most terrible shit that they say, but they still laugh at it. They're still able to laugh at it.
Yeah.
And so basically, you know, us being comedians, even though the shit that we went through and the shit that we do go through, we're still able to laugh at it because we can't help it. That's us as comics. And fuck yeah. Thank you, Jake. Tell them about where they can find you at. Cheers, sir. Mm.
Y'all can find me at the kitchen table with Kyle. Presley.
And this nice island with the marble top.
If you're looking for me virtually, you can find me on Instagram My handle is at Jizelegance. That's Jizelegance. The letters Jay-Z and the word elegance together. I'm trying to think of how I came up with that years ago, but it made me laugh when I thought of it. And that's where I'm on Instagram. You can find great landscape pictures and occasional jokes. And I'm on Facebook, but don't look for me there because that's a waste of everybody's time. So look for me in the world. That's the funnest place to be.
That's where I prefer people to look me at, because I don't care for social sites, but I have to do it just so I can get shit out there. But hey, man, I have been your host, the Maniacal Menace, Kyle Smith. Say the whole thing like a pimp lane slickback, man. And until next time, catch y'all later, man.